Cancer can take away all my physical abilities. It cannot touch my mind, it cannot touch my heart, and it cannot touch my soul. And those three things are going to carry on forever.
Welcome back to the Voices for Victory podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm your host, Mick McDonald. Well, it's March, and I don't know about you, but it's my favorite month of the year. The madness is well underway. So there was no question that we had to bring ESPN college basketball analyst Jay Billis on the pod. Jay is not only one of the brightest, funniest analysts in all of sports, but incredibly passionate about cancer research. So much so that he became a member of the V Foundation's board of directors back in December of 2019. Today, we chat with Jay about why joining the V board was an easy call for him, ESPN's top-to-bottom passion for supporting cancer research, what he remembers most about the 1983 NC State National Champion team, and also, of course, he gives us his thoughts on who he expects to see playing for the National Championship. And now, our conversation with Jay Billis.
And I always have to think about what's important in life is to think to me of three things: where you started, where you are, and where you're going to be. Those are the three things that I try and do every day.
And we are now joined by Jay Billis. Jay, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to chat with us today.
No, thanks for having me. Excited to be with you.
So a lot I want to get into, but first off, you're a relatively new member of the V Foundation's board of directors. You joined alongside Sage Steele back in December of 2019. And, you know, I know the world's been anything but normal since then. But what has your first year and change as part of the V Foundation board been like for you?
It's been a great learning experience, one, just a singular honor. But I think listening to, and I've tried to do a lot of listening, which is unusual for me, but listening to so many thoughtful minds about things that people care deeply about has been really enlightening and inspiring more than anything. So I'm just trying to get my feet wet and learn how I can best help more than anything, but it's been a wonderful, wonderful experience, wonderful honor.
Now, what was sort of the steps you took that led to you becoming a part of the board? Can you kind of walk the listeners through how that came to be?
Yeah, I got a couple of phone calls about would I be interested, and you know, as you guys know, ESPN, my employer for the last 25 years has been a driving force behind the success of the V Foundation. And it's been a tremendous commitment on the part of the company and everybody in the company to do our best to help with the V Foundation and make it a priority for all of us, and not only in our professional lives, but in our personal lives. So when the call came, you know, would you be willing to help? It didn't take me very long to say yes. Like, what do you need? And that's sort of been my answer to every, don't tell anybody this, but it's probably not the smartest thing to say, but it's kind of been my answer to everything is yes. What do you need? Yes. And if there's something I can't do, whether it's physically, my schedule, whatever, I'll say so. But, you know, you tell people, hey, assume the answer is yes. And if I'm unable to do it, I'll let you know.
Well, there's a rumor going around that when, we decided that, okay, we got Sage Steele on the board. Wow. Well, what's the catch? Well, you got to have Billis too. So
yeah. It to get somebody as great as Sage, you know, you're going to have to take a hit. And I think I may be the hit.
I mean, you mentioned you've been a part of the ESPN team for many, many years now. And the commitment that ESPN's made to the V Foundation is just incredible. And I think people from the outside see it, you know, on TV, they see, you know, they see Dick talking about it. They see the ESPYs and V Week and all that great stuff. But can you just, you know, tell our listeners a little bit about how much that just filters down throughout the entire company at ESPN? There's people who are behind the scenes, people who take time out of their everyday jobs to be on committees and make all of this stuff that people see on TV happen. The passion is just incredible.
Yeah, I think it comes from the shared experience of dealing with cancer. And it doesn't mean that you have to have had cancer in order to understand how it affects, you know, the world we live in and our culture, because we've all known people. I mean, I've helped out with you know, cancer efforts for a long time. We all have. But I was at it was called Coaches versus Cancer, still is. And I was at an event, 15 years ago at Gonzaga. I was hosting the event, and somebody there did something that it was the first time I had seen it, and I've seen it since, but walked up to the podium and said, if you have had cancer, if a member of your family has had cancer, or if a very close friend has had cancer, would you please stand up? And the whole room stood. The whole room. And I hadn't thought about it that way, that how close a connection we all have to this. And so when you have a company initiative like the V Foundation, and then you have the individual initiative, and those two things come together, everybody wants to do their part and then some, because it matters. And I think, to me, what always grabbed me about the V Foundation, beyond sort of how it affects your heart, of Jim Valvano's speech, of all the things that the fight against cancer, it all means to all of us, is every dollar that you give to the V Foundation goes directly to cancer research. Every single dollar. And in a world where, in the world we're living in now and have been for a long time, where, you know, you feel like you can't trust everything, that's one thing you can trust. And that's always blown me away. And I've always felt so good about that you can tell people, hey, man, every dollar, every penny goes to cancer research. So you don't have to worry about, you know, expenses here or this there, that's taken care of in another way. Every dollar goes directly to it. And that's a very powerful thing that I think we have to keep repeating to people, because it's important.
Yeah, I know it's something that as an organization we're really proud of. And, the fact that people aren't donating to take care of staff salary and that kind of things, that's all covered by our endowment, which ESPN is a big part of us being able to do that. It just, like you said, it takes away all the questions that someone might have when they're giving. And you talked a little bit too about being in a room where everyone stands up because they've all known someone who has had cancer. I mean, that's most rooms you're in. But at ESPN, you guys are more public with the people that who have had cancer. You've had people like Stuart Scott, who, of course, unfortunately passed away, and people who've gone through cancer battles like Shelley Smith and Holly Rowe. How has that been for you, seeing some of your colleagues go through, very public battles with cancer? Has that been motivating or inspiring to you?
It's all been inspiring. Yes. The answer is yes. But it goes beyond ESPN. I'm an attorney in addition to being a broadcaster for ESPN. So I've had colleagues at my law firm, close friends, family members that have gone through similar experiences. And I've been so inspired by all of it. The thing about, when a public figure goes through it, it happens to people who aren't public figures at the same rate, and it's the same difficulty. But the public figures have that platform where it can be really powerful when you share something that's honestly intensely private. You can have these private battles, but for some reason, when it's more a together thing, which is really important, I think, that nobody should go through this feeling alone, not just individually, but alone, your family, even your extended family. This is a community fight, not an individual family battle. And I think that's where, sort of the public nature of some of my ESPN colleagues, of their battles, it's our battle. And I think that's brought that to the fore, that it's not just this person or that person or this family or that family. It's all of us. And that's, to me, that's an important distinction, is the team aspect of this.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you hit the nail on the head there. And that's part of kind of what I was getting at there is, you know, using that platform to tell people, hey, you're not alone. Other people are going through this. You know, I spoke with Holly last year for a long interview, and she's just the best. And Holly, we wanted you to come on the podcast. But she said, you know, she was hesitant to become public because, you know, she just didn't want to make it about her. But then she thought, hey, if I can help anyone, if I can help one person who's maybe going through, or, you know, when she had to lose her hair, that was very personal. But she said, hey, if some other woman is going through this and can, you know, relate to me and say, hey, I can do what she's doing, that's a powerful tool to be able to use. And I think, you know, Holly and Shelly and some of these other people have just done an amazing job of making it a team. You know, Holly said she opened her social media mentions and allowed people to vent or talk to her or see what she's going through. I think that platform is such a helpful tool when it comes to awareness or just being there for someone. I think is just an amazing thing to do when, like you said, it's a very private thing to go through.
Yeah. And it's not going to be, and I don't want to, you know, get all soapboxy on you here, but the fight against cancer is not an individual fight, you know, where, you know, you have a cancer survivor that we say he or she beat cancer. That's not going to happen individually. The only way that we're going to win this is a together effort to beat cancer once and for all. Otherwise, it's just going to be a random outcome. And we've made so many strides toward the ultimate goal. Like the thing I'm looking forward to most, and I do believe it's going to happen in our lifetimes, is the gala we're going to have when we say this is the last gala. This is our celebratory gala of we won, we beat cancer, and we're not going to have another one. That's going to be the one we're working for, is to have the final one. And you know, now we have these events, these fundraising events and efforts that are of vital importance, that we donate, you know, so much of our time, effort, money, and we need to continue, and we will. But the ultimate goal is get to the last one. And that's going to be a pretty good party. I can't wait for that one.
Yeah, hopefully we can all be in the same room for that one. and I know our now former CEO Susan Braun always used to say, people ask me what will you do if you get to that point? And she says, we'll find something to do.
Oh, we'll be fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Jay, I want to ask you a little bit about you know, your coach when you played at Duke, obviously Coach K. You played against Jim Valvano back in your ACC days. In terms of because they were obviously very close, and you know, Coach K is a part of our board as well. In terms of their personalities or their coaching styles, how would you sort of compare the two in their styles?
Well, they were contemporaries, similar, you know, same age, and came into the ACC at about the same time. And Jim Valvano was more successful earlier, so his first few years in the league. And Coach K's were very different. It was a struggle for Coach K to establish, you know, the Duke program while Jim had won the national championship in 1983. And they were different personality-wise. I mean, most people don't know that Coach K is ridiculously funny and engaging and all that. They kind of see him on the sidelines and assume that because he's got a competitive furrowed brow during the game, and you might give the what for to the officials and all that, that somehow he's not as good a guy as Jim was. And he is. But Jim just had a public way about him that, I mean, I've said this before, and I'm not the only one that said this. If Jim Valvano had lived, right now he would have a late night talk show. He'd probably have like 25 Emmys and an Oscar, and you know, he would not have gone back into coaching, because he'd go, why should I watch film all day when this is so easy? You know, he'd have cookbooks out, and he was just so engaging and fun, and you know, Coach K wasn't quite that way then. I think he'd at least publicly, the public couldn't see it. But both great coaches. And I think at the time, like, Jim was so, he was he was very demanding of his players, but also, like, you could tell after the game was over, his press conferences were always fun, and he always had something that made you laugh, kept the players in a great mood. He just made people feel good. And he even as opponents, like, there was one time I've told this story, like, you don't have any new stories, sadly, but about Jim. But when we were playing at NC State one time, I had blocked a dunk of Lorenzo Charles, which sounds like almost like a fantasy thing, like I had dreamed it. And Valvano was wearing out the officials that I had fouled him, and I didn't. And so he like, I was like 5 feet away from him when we had run down to the other end. There was a stop and play, and he's laying into the officials that I had fouled Lorenzo Charles. And then after that, he looked over at me. He goes, "Good block." and I was like, that might be the coolest thing that's ever happened to me. You know, the opposing coach like acknowledged that. I just thought that was the neatest thing.
I think that's a great story too. I think most people who either played or coached against Jim probably have some sort of story like that, right? Where Jim, a little side comment that you're going to remember for the rest of your life because he just had that personality. And I know you mentioned obviously the championship team in 83 with most people, you know the story of the incredible run. You know, they had to win the ACC tournament, and then in the NCAAs, they had to beat Ralph Sampson and Hakeem Olajuwon. You know, you've been in college basketball basically your entire adult life. Do you think there has ever been or will ever be a similar Cinderella run? You know, I know Villanova in 85 had the crazy run, but just the fact of what that team had to go through and who they had to beat, you know, let alone surviving Billis fouling Lorenzo Charles, they had to beat Ralph Sampson and Hakeem Olajuwon. Do you think we've ever seen anything like that run, or we could again?
I don't know. I mean, it's highly unlikely. It was unlikely that happened. I mean, not just Ralph Sampson and Hakeem Olajuwon beating Virginia and Houston, but, you know, they were very fortunate to beat Pepperdine.
Right.
I mean, Pepperdine had them beat. And you know, if I remember right, Boot Bond, one of the great free throw shooters in Pepperdine history, missed free throws at the end of that game for NC State to win. So the improbable things that happened, you know, could that happen again? I suppose it could. But the odds are against it. I mean, I don't think there had ever been anything like that before, and I can't remember anything like that since. But, you know, the other side of that is when we start talking about how improbable it was, you know, NC State was really good too. Like they had really good players. And one of the things people forget is that Derek Wittenberg was injured in the middle of that season. They had played at their place, they had played Virginia, and Wittenberg had 27 points, if I remember right, in the first half, and broke his foot, and that sort of derailed their season a little bit and put them in the position of having to win the ACC tournament to get into the NCAA tournament. Had Wittenberg not been injured in that particular game, I think it would have been them, Virginia and Carolina at the top of the league, and nobody would have been discussing sort of the Cinderella part. They would have been talking about NC State being one of the best teams in the country the whole year.
Yeah, we had Derek on the pod recently. He talked a little bit about that too. And I think in hindsight, it certainly makes for a better story, right? That Derek missed those games and allowed them to kind of have that Cinderella feel. One of the things, you know, I think anyone who listens to a game that you call, it's quick to notice how much humor you bring to the broadcast. It playful back and forth with your play-by-play guys, or you know, some self-deprecation. I think I even heard a Borat impression a couple of weeks ago on a game that you called. I know you want to educate and talk about the game, but how important is it to you that you're also having fun while you're calling the game?
Well, it's important to me personally that I have fun. And I think when I was younger, you tried to take your job really seriously and make sure that you did right by the job. And every game felt like an audition, that you were auditioning for, you know, to keep your job and to get more work, things like that, or get better games, whatever it is. But over the years, you know, you've had so many reps and so many games that, you know, I sort of realized I don't have to get everything in on every broadcast, and I don't want to turn it into a basketball clinic. I certainly don't want to turn it into a comedy show either. You just want to have balance of, you know, for most people, you know, if people are total X and O basketball people, they can go to a clinic and get that part of them satisfied. And if other people just want to gamble on the game, they only care about the outcome, then they'll be fine too. If I talk about why a team scored, you just want to try to have a balance and try to enjoy yourself. The most interesting part about sort of the broadcast field to me is I can spend, like, we had a game recently where a kid from Duke, Jamin Brakefield, had come into the game and scored like 9 straight points or something. And I had made a reference to this guy has been instant offense. And he reminded me a little bit of like when Vinnie Johnson used to come in to the game for the Detroit Pistons, and his nickname was the Microwave. And I said, well, we can't call him the Microwave. One, it's taken, and two, it's an old technology. We have to come up with something different, just kind of joking around. And all of a sudden, my phone started blowing up. Like, I keep my phone there. I don't really look at it during the game, but it started blowing up with text messages from coaches, like head coaches around the country saying, call him the air fryer, or call him the Instapot, or call him this. And you know, like Grant Hill is texting me, or this guy. And so I kind of brought it up in the air. Okay, here's what I'm getting. And so all the work you did about knowing all the stats, and here's what this team runs on out of bounds underneath, and late clock situations, here's what you look for. And all anybody could talk about was air fryer. And it was that was what kind of took the discussion of the game over, not in the game, but how people processed it afterwards. And it kind of reminds you this is supposed to be fun, and not everybody is taking notes during the game on you know what out of bounds play Georgia Tech runs, you know, in after their initial timeout. So you try to balance the fun with the importance of the game and all that stuff, and hopefully you strike the right balance. Sometimes you miss.
Speaking of fun, I know this is just audio, but for people that don't know, I have a luscious full head of hair. It's no Reese Davis, but it's pretty good.
Screw you.
It's pretty
good. Screw you for bringing that up.
Well, I want to ask you about it though, Jay, because every time I see you on TV, it's strictly you and other bald guys. It's you're calling a game with Dan Shulman or Sean McDonough. You have your show with Seth Greenberg and LaFonso Ellis. You know, besides letting Reese host game day, which I assume is just part of your contract that you let Reese be a part of game day. What is the deal with that? You can't work with some other guys. They'd have some hair going. What's going on?
Yeah. Reese Davis on game day is strictly a diversity hire. we had to have some people with hair on the broadcast. You know, what's funny about that. When I was a kid, I had really long hair. You know, it was the '70s. I was born in 1963. So, you know, kind of grew up in the '70s, started high school in the '70s. And so I had a bunch of floppy hair, including when I was at Duke, and I hardly ever got it cut. And now I have none, and I get it cut all the time. It's absurd because I have to keep it, you know, tight because I've only got a couple of follicles left. So it's kind of I accepted, you know, and surrendered to being bald a long time ago. And it was the best decision I ever made. I don't swirl it around or do some things that my friends do now to try to hang on to it. But you know, there still is, you know, the insensitive person with hair that constantly brings up that they have hair. I've noticed that you have hair. I don't need you telling me.
Well, shouts to Reese for putting up with you and LaFonso and Seth every week, because I know how difficult that must be. All right, so we're recording this in early March. You know, conference tournament's just starting to get going. Still a long way to go, and by the time this goes public, the tournament will have, you know, be underway. So this won't help anyone filling out their brackets, but it does have the potential to make you look like a genius, which I know you'll enjoy. So, you know, I know the brackets aren't out yet or anything, but if you could give me, you say right now, the two teams you think are going to play for the national championship on that Monday night in April, who would be the two that you'd pick right now?
I would pick probably Baylor and Gonzaga, with Michigan a close third. Those are the best teams, but I wouldn't count on that happening. It's even in a year like this where, you know, the pandemic has created obstacles that none of us could have imagined and stressors that none of us could have predicted. The tournament is inherently unpredictable, and that's part of the beauty of it. But maybe in a year like this, where it has been so bizarre, we will have the bizarre happening of the two best teams, you know, being in the championship game. I doubt that's going to happen just because of the nature of the tournament. But those are the best that I've seen.
Yeah, and I think people tend to forget how crazy the tournament can be, right? It's like their minds were erased from the previous year, and obviously it's been now almost 2 years since we've had a tournament. But you know, the best teams don't always make it to the championship round, especially in a one-off single elimination setting. You know, Gonzaga and Baylor certainly have separated themselves a little bit, but like you said, anything can happen, which I think is what makes March so much fun. Jay, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to chat with us today. We really appreciate it. And also, I know we like to kid around, but of course, we're so grateful to have you as part of our board and as part of the V Foundation team.
No, I'm grateful just to be a part of it and a part of such a great team. So thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Jay for taking the time to chat with us, especially during what is an insanely busy month for him. We really appreciate it. And we, of course, appreciate all of you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if so, please remember to subscribe to the pod wherever you listen so you never miss an episode. And also a positive review, 5 stars, please, is unbelievably helpful as we continue to find new listeners. So if you can, please let us know what you think about the podcast. For more information on the V Foundation, you can visit v.org. And be sure to follow us on all your favorite social media channels at the V Foundation. Thanks again for joining us today, and we'll be back with a new episode before you know it. Once again, I'm your host, Mick McDonald. Until next time.
To me, there are three things we all should do every day. We do this every day of our life. You're going to have, what a wonderful, number one is laugh. You should laugh every day. Number two is think. You should spend some time in thought. And number three is you should have your emotions moved to tears. Could be happiness or joy. But think about it. If you laugh, you think, and you cry, that's a full day. That's a heck of a day.